Hello and welcome to this UFC 326 post-fight show. I'm Ariel Helwani. It is 12:23 a.m. Eastern Time. There is a new BMF champion. His name is Charles Dubronx Oliveira. He just beat Max Holloway in very, very dominant fashion. Holy smokes. Over 20 minutes of control time. A lot of the action was on the ground. The crowd was quite restless. They were booing a lot. It was not your typical BMF title fight, if you want to say that. You know, the history of the BMF belt is not a very long one. It was introduced in 2019. But I will say this, for everything that I say about the belt, it usually produces a fun fight. This wasn't a crowd-pleasing fight. It was a very dominant, one-sided fight. The least amount of significant strikes that we've seen from Max Holloway in a fight since December of 2015. That was his win over Jeremy Stephens, and that was a 3-round fight. This was a 5-round fight. Right now, the unofficial tally is just 73 strikes from a guy who throws a lot, but he didn't have a lot of opportunities to throw. None of the judges gave a 10-8. I thought maybe the second round could have been a 10-8, but in the end, it was 50-45 times 3 for all the judges. So Charles Oliveira is the new UFC BMF champion. What does this all mean? What does this mean for Conor McGregor, who clearly, as he said yesterday with Ian Parker and Chael Sonnen, being talked about for a BMF title fight? We're going to get into all of that and more. The biggest news of the day isn't anything that happened at UFC 326. It's that the UFC finally announced the White House card, which is going down June 14th, of course, in Washington, D.C., the main event, Ilya Topuria versus Justin Gaethje, co-main event, Alex Pereira versus Ciryl Gane for the interim, not vacant, interim heavyweight title. No John Jones on the card, but you are getting the likes of Sean O'Malley, Bo Nickel, and others. There's the card. There's the cool logo, UFC Freedom 250. I have a feeling the vast majority of you would rather hear us talk about that. We will talk about that on this year's post show. We'll talk about it on Monday as well. But we have to give 326, and in particular, the main event, it's, it's due credit. So let's get into it. I, of course, am not alone on this late Saturday night. I am being joined by the mayor of the Nutmeg State, the man in the hat, the one and only, Chuck Mendenhall. Chuck, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Ariel. I'm a little surprised at what just went down, but I'm all right.
I was trying to time this so that we could start at maybe 12:39, because the number 39 is in my brain. Oh, that of course is.
I was hoping we get to the end of the show before we talked about that. But
that the New York Knicks beat the Denver Nuggets. Yeah. Look, I owed you one. I owed you one from January.
You did.
That was a nice little victory on Friday night. But I'm not going to be that petty, Chuck. I'm not going to be. Is that a UConn hat you're wearing there? Is that a UConn Huskies hat?
UConn. Yeah, that's UConn.
Hell yeah. Shout out to Dan Hurley, my guy. Also, of course, we are being joined by the patron saint of the Emerald Isle, the host of the critically acclaimed podcast, The Crack. There he is, Mr. Pete C. Carroll. How are you? What is The Crack?
Crack is pretty underwhelmed. I'm not going to lie to you. Bit of a weird one for the BMF, a fight that didn't really lend itself to what we imagined the BMF to be, but a great performance nonetheless from Charles Oliveira, and underwhelmed on another front as well, which I'm sure we'll get onto later on. But glad to be talking to you and Chuck, of course.
Well, let's talk about the biggest news, gents, off the bat. I mean, Gregory Rodriguez, the ageless wonder with a fantastic win, RoboCop, just doing it again. No, guys, let's talk about the main event.
Can you imagine? Out of all of that, that's what we start with.
Charles Oliveira is the new BMF champion. And Chuck, look, I've been very vocal and very transparent about how I feel about this belt. It is a JV title. It is a fictitious belt. It is a fictitious belt. It is a toy belt. It is a WWF hardcore title. It's just a thing that they use to headline shows and to get people excited about. And I'm sorry if that comes across as disrespectful. That is not my intention. But Chuck, in June of last year, we saw Ilya Topuria viciously knock out Charles Oliveira. How could we call this man the BMF when Ilya Topuria is the champion still in that same weight class? If you want to give it some sort of wrinkle and have no rounds, no weight classes, and find out who is the toughest SOB in this business, I get it. But this is all nonsense. And so, to me, people get so hung up on that title. I say, forget about the damn title. Look at the fight. If you want to say the fight didn't live up to what we thought Charles Oliveira versus Max Holloway should be, I get that. Just like Khamzat versus DDP wasn't interesting. Just like Islam versus JDM wasn't interesting. You could say that, but to add like some sort of weird expectations because this nonsense JV belt is involved is such a waste of our time and energy. How do you feel about what just transpired?
So let me ask you this, like at the end of that fight, like a minute ago, DC asked Joe Rogan and those guys like, hey guys, I don't mean to be that guy, but should Oliveira have, you know, put his chin out there a little more? Should he have stood and traded? You know what I mean? Like that was it was a good question because of what you're pointing out. There's been a consensus, I think. I don't know if it's a consensus, but there's been a lot of people, I think, that thought the belt was almost defined in the moment when, you know, Holloway threw down the gauntlet against Justin Gaethje. Okay, suddenly he's winning easily on the scorecards for that fight. Now you've put a definition to it. But let's be honest, that's Max Holloway, right? Like, Max Holloway is going to fight that way. That doesn't mean that Charles Oliveira is. And as soon as I saw that first round, what was it, a minute in, and the fight goes to the ground, and you saw that he was in survival mode, Max Holloway, for the rest of that round, you kind of knew at that point, you're like, okay, he's treating this like, I just need to win this fight. I want to submit him. Like, he was trying to, he had him in trouble a lot, but his whole goal was not to stand and trade, man. It was like to do the exact opposite, to nullify the very things that people were, you know, hanging their hat on to say that, I guess what, you know, this abstract idea of what the BMF is. If anything, man, I think that this proves your point, right? Like this, if you're not going to add some dimension to the BMF, like they're not going to give it some kind of distinction from just a regular fight, then I'm not sure what we're doing because, you know, we're watching that fight. Charles Oliveira did exactly what he was supposed to do, but that's what he would do in any fight if he wants to remain in contention. So there was no distinguishing factor here.
PT.
I feel like this belt was brought in, you know, so they could put the two most exciting guys, two fan favorites together, essentially, Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. And it's like, it's always been two people that aren't quite champions in this fight because the people love them. The people love the way they fight. So I know it's not exactly stated, and Chuck's made that point where, you know, we expect these certain things. But I do think the UFC have kind of given us this idea as well, this kind of stand and bang kind of attitude towards it. And that removed, if this is any other fight, this is all we're talking about is what a brilliant performance it is from Charles Oliveira, because he was utterly dominant. And I agree with Chuck as well. The first takedown, the body lock, and he just slams him down to the canvas. And we saw this a number of times throughout the fight. It's absolutely brilliant. But I do feel as though that those boos from the crowd is because they bought tickets to see something that didn't quite happen in front of them.
Yeah, but you can't script this. Look, they got it right. First of all, just for the record, August of 2019, when Nathan Diaz beats Anthony Pettis and he's doing the post-fight interview, he just says to Joe Rogan, and now I want to defend this title against Jorge Masvidal. No one knew what he was talking about. I don't even know if he called it the BMF on that night. If my memory serves me correct, he didn't. He didn't talk to the UFC about it. And then they liked the idea and then they bastardized it and corporatized it. And they got it right in November of 2019, because after that fight, they said it was one and done. That was it. They only reintroduced it in July of 2014, of 2024, a full 5 years later, because they couldn't find anything else. They couldn't find anything else to headline that card in 2023, in Utah. It was Justin Gaethje versus Dustin Poirier. So they reintroduced it in a different weight class involving someone not named Jorge Masvidal. Remember, he ended up fighting Kamaru Usman and all this stuff. So they got it right in 2019 when they got rid of the belt. They said it was a one and done, and then they brought it back because they needed, you know, belts to headline shows. They don't need that anymore in this new deal. I feel like it's run its course, and it just puts, to your point, PC, unfair expectations on a fight. Because yes, if this was just a 5-round main event involving two legends, I think we'd be talking right now about how he neutralized Max Holloway, how he almost stopped him, it seemed, in the first round. He almost submitted him, how Max was smart enough to survive that, what happened in the second round, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is it my fight of the year? No. Was it a very exciting fight? No. Was I looking at the clock at times? Absolutely. But then you add, look, I'm looking at my Twitter right now. The two top trending things, and I don't know if that's catered towards me because of my activity, are not a BMF and worse BMF. And so it adds this insane level of expectation to a fight, and I just don't think that it means anything anymore. And it annoys me to no end we've always been told that the champion of a weight class is the baddest mofo, and now 155 has three titles. It has an actual champion, an interim champion, and a BMF champion. It's silly. It's the stuff that they always told us they didn't do. It's the stuff that they always told us they weren't all about, and I know they've changed their tune a million different ways over the past 10 years, but I hate it. And honestly, there is a conversation to be had here, Chuck. Look, I said a million times, Conor was not in the running for the White House. They have to make money off of Conor McGregor. They can't make money off of him fighting at the White House. And so what they were looking at was Conor fighting the winner of this fight on July 11th. After that performance, do you think that Charles Oliveira took himself out of the running for that fight because it just wasn't fan-friendly?
I mean, he's 100% out of the running for that fight, because if he could do that to Max Holloway in a sustained 25-minute effort like that, it's just, I can't imagine a guy coming back from 5 year absence who actually you're dealing with his one vulnerability that was kind of a known vulnerability of going to the mat. I just cannot imagine that you would do that. In that case, too, like, you know, the BMF, you're right. When you kind of break this down, you know, it's run its course when it hits something like this, because I don't know why you would need, like, you have a guy. And Charles Oliveira, it was one thing a little bit with the Holloway. That's what I'm saying. Maybe he gave it some meaning with what he was able to do with Gaethje. But with Charles Oliveira, the dude has like a handful of UFC records, like all these significant records. He's already a Hall of Famer. He's still vital. You know what I mean? It's not like, so you're not doing this kind of like this oldie shtick where he's kind of done in the relevant way. He's still relevant. So I don't know why, like if they were going to take it away, this would be the time, right? I feel like if you're going to retire that belt and get rid of it, this would be the time. But it certainly didn't seem like that was their, you know what I mean? Even in the promos and everything that they were doing, it doesn't feel like that's what they're going to do.
Oh, no. It feels like they're propping it up even more. Conor McGregor has weighed in on the fight, and he tweeted, DC on Max on top, quote, he should stall, LOL. He should have elbowed all the open targets, payback. Quote unquote stall, LOL, fuck off. Shockingly bad fight. I am shocked. Charles is a little Charlie. Ha ha ha. Very bad. Charles, very bad. Hang your head bad. Good luck. Don't crown that belt. I think they wanted to put Conor in a title fight, and this is why John Kavanaugh was talking about open weight classes, and this is why Conor was talking about the BMF very recently. I just don't know if they want to risk having him in there against someone who's going to do that in a fight. And I know who I'm talking about. It's Charles Oliveira, one of the most beloved fighters of all time, one of the most gifted fighters of all time. But PT, do you think that he has now taken himself out of the running given that performance?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the UFC more so. Like, I think if they tell McGregor fighting Charles Oliveira, he'll fight. I get a real appetite for fighting off Conor lately. And as I've said since the start of the year, I do think there is more of an incentive for him to fight than ever. But I just think the UFC, if we're going to do a McGregor fight, they want it to be a McGregor fight. And I really don't know why they're looking around and thinking about maybe this guy, maybe that guy. Nate Diaz is the fight. Give us the trilogy fight. Give us the closure. That is the fight. If it doesn't happen here, it's going to happen on Misfits in 5 years' time when nobody really wants to see it anymore. I think that is the fight to make if McGregor's coming back. Two legends of the sport. And it's a trilogy fight. They're one each. I think that makes perfect sense.
You're 100% right. I mean, honestly, Michael Chandler was the fight. Michael Chandler should still be fighting Conor McGregor. They are giving him the White House card, which we'll talk about in a moment. But you're 100% right. I think there'll be way more interest in that. There is one small issue. They have to make a deal with Nate Diaz. They've got to sign him. They've got to get him back. He is a free man. He could do whatever he wants right now. But yes, I think that there will be more enthusiasm after this performance than a Charles Oliveira fight. But I do think that there is some desire to put him in a title fight. Although maybe he'll come to his senses and say, I don't want to be in a title fight because he has two fights left on his deal. You fight for the belt. And I don't know if the contractual stipulations will be the same for him and for the BMF title, but then you end up tying yourself up, right? If you want to truly hit the open market and see what's out there, especially in this Netflix era that we're in, and especially in this $15 million for a co-main event era that we're in, maybe he wants to be a free man. So overall, guys, I don't think that Charles Oliveira's like Q rating is going to take a big hit after tonight. I think people will still love him. I just think they need to take a hard look at that title and see if they still want to be in business with it. If it's not a Conor fight, I do kind of wonder, guys, And Chuck, I'll ask you, is it maybe the Armin fight? Because now we know that it's Justin versus Ilya. And if they do go in a different direction with Conor, maybe it's the Armin versus Charles rematch that we saw at UFC 300. What do you think of that?
I mean, that was a good fight. You know what I mean? I'd be okay with that. But again, this is such a relevant thing, right? When the BMF, it almost felt like in the spirit of what it was designed to be, it wouldn't run into any kind of actual title talk, or it wasn't really supposed to. It was like supposed to be its own thing. And you're too close to the sun, right? Like if you're talking about Armin, you know, or even Charles at this point. So I don't know, man. I'm kind of with you. I tried to give into the novelty of it. I really did, man. I go back and forth on it. You tell me, because people are always like, well, they make more money. They make more money if they're fighting for this belt. Is it the same thing? Like, should ask you, because you would know this. Do they actually get sort of like title pay when they're yes. fighting for BMF? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, there are benefits to it in that sense, but I don't really like it if, like you said, the biggest point to me is the baddest mofo is the one who holds the actual title. And if you're starting to get too close to that with the BMF title, it just, I don't understand. It's redundant, if nothing else. You know, it's just, it's very strange. But can I ask you guys something? You heard the boos coming down. I know you pointed this out, and I was like, man, that's a bad look. But it's a recurring thing. And there's almost a point where I was like, man, when's the last time you remember when this many... I mean, I know they're not pay-per-views, but like the numbered cards going back into the pay-per-view era had main events that were just so one-sided that they seemed determined in the, you know what I mean? Like they just didn't have any drama. I mean, you go back, I was thinking about this, you know, obviously the Volk fight that just happened with Diego wasn't very competitive. The Gaethje-Paddy fight was kind of entertaining, but Paddy just wasn't like, it didn't seem like he had anything that was going to turn the tables. And if you go backwards, I know there's an outlier here or there, but the Gon Aspinall thing was completely anticlimactic the way it went down. You know, Islam with Jack Del. Yeah. And then, you know, Shamaya, like we've had so many main events now where it just feels like it's either anticlimactic or it's so non-competitive that it loses interest to the whole audience all at once. It's a very strange time that way. I can't remember this ever happening before.
You're 100% right. No, you are 100% right. And that's kind of the lens in which I'm looking at the White House card. I'm looking at the White House card as like, oh, this is actually like a really good six-fight main card, if you will. There's only six fights on the card. And it's not, we're not getting this type of depth in the UFC these days. And that's why I don't hate it. But again, I think our expectations have been altered dramatically. Like, and it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the week. Like, they're just not delivering the mega marquee events. That's why I had no confidence in them getting a deal done with Jon Jones. That's why I didn't believe them when they said that they were going to make, you know, seven or eight title fights on this card. That's just not who they are. That's just not what the organization is anymore. And so, yeah, the matchups are the matchups, but you're 100% right. I'm looking at the last few pay-per-views or whatever you want to call them, numbered events. The last one, as you said, was Volkanovski-Lopez. Prior to that, it was the Gaethje-Paddy fight. Prior to that, it was the Merab Yan fight, which was great.
The only one that was.
But it was one-sided. You know, it was one-sided, went the distance. Prior to that, it was the JDM Islam fight. Prior to that, it was Aspinall again. Prior to that, it was Ankalaev Pereira, which ended in emphatic fashion, no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And then you could go down the line. Then you get to do DDP Chimaev and Holloway Poirier. So, yeah, it's an interesting.
Weird.
It's an interesting time in the sport, no doubt about it. It's certainly
interesting. That's kind of not interesting when you're watching the fights, though.
Well,
that's the problem, right?
Especially
you're
at
watching the fights.
At your hour,
man,
yeah.
There used to be fights on the prelims that you, like, not the prelims, sorry, like the start of the main card, the supporting act in these main cards, where it was just felt like the matchmakers understood the fan base so much, like, oh, these two together, this is going to be absolutely magic. They understand that there's stakes outside of just rankings and things like this. Like, they'd understand a fight that would just completely stimulate the fan base. We just don't see them anymore. It just feels like who's available, throw them on there. Are they around the same area? Let's go with that. And, you know, there's a big name in the main event usually, and it's all stacked towards that. The product is not what it was, and they've made their money, a massive success, no doubt about it. Unbelievable. Like, you know, you talk about boxing kind of welcoming in this UFC model because of how brilliant it's been. And obviously the amount they've sold to Paramount Plus for is a testament to how brilliant the product is. But for fight fans, it's not been a great run. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get to it on the White House card. Like, you know, they built it up so much, and it happened with UFC 300, and this is going to be absolutely amazing. It's a great card.
Yeah.
If you hadn't said all that stuff,
let me say this.
Sorry.
I feel like we're foaming at the mouth to talk about it. Yeah, so let me just tell you that Caio Bahalio beat RDR via unanimous decision. Raul Rosas Jr. beat Rob Font via unanimous decision, and that came right after the announcement, so I feel like a lot of people weren't even paying attention, but it was a very dominant win for the youngster, who is certainly partying in Las Vegas for the first time as a 21-year-old. Drew Dober knocked out Michael Johnson, and there was all kinds of drama surrounding this fight. Not really in the fight, but before the fight, it was taken off every sports book in America, essentially. I know BetMGM, I know FanDuel, I know DraftKings, because there was a huge swing once again in the line. Second time in a row Michael Johnson fight is involved in something like this. Michael has come back and obviously fought tonight. Alex Hernandez, who was a part of that fight back in January, has not come back. Second time in a row, but this time the fight did happen. It was not canceled. Drew Dober ended up knocking out Michael Johnson. Dober, by the way, ended up, I think if my math is correct, ended up going from favorite to dog, or was it the opposite? I don't know. I need Connor Burks for this. But anyway, it was some weird extreme. It was the opposite. There you go. Thank you for that, Josh. It was the opposite. Some weird extreme line movement. And that gave the sports books pause. So they removed the fight, meaning you couldn't bet on it. They didn't put it back, but in the end, the fight actually happened. The aforementioned Gregory Rodriguez ended up knocking out Bruno Ferreira in the first round. That was the first fight of the main card, but it wasn't the first fight on CBS. They, for the first time ever, guys, had the UFC on CBS. It wasn't the first ever MMA card on CBS or MMA fight. You have to go back to May of 2008, Newark, New Jersey, Elite XC primetime for that. The first fight on CBS ever, and you could have dictated this, was Dante Johnson versus Cody Brundage. And it was a very underwhelming fight. Why did you start the CBS UFC era with that fight? A nothing fight that was not a good fight. And then the second one was Cody Garbrandt versus Long Zhao, which was just a sloppy, weird fight in which Long Zhao had 2 points removed for illegal nut shots. And would have won had he not had those 2 points removed and not fought like a crazy person. In the end, Cody Garbrandt wins. And that was also a weird fight. Cody Garbrandt's throwing up into a bucket due to these nut shots. Just so weird. Just bizarre. Just absolutely bizarre. Alberto Montes beat Ricky Tercios via anaconda choke. And there were a bunch of guys on the undercard who I'll maybe attempt to say their name. I was watching Tumen. These fights. Go ahead, Chuck.
It's Tumen. That's how I always remember it. But the
Tumen
rest of it,
Dembrell beat Cody Durden. Sumerderji beat Jesus Aguilar. Nergajay beat Tobias. And Bellato beat Fernandez. Yeah, I said to the guys in the group, I was like, it just feels like a lot of inconsequential, insignificant fights. Like, what is this? What is this product? It's just a lot of inconsequential. And like the guys on the broadcast, God. Like, this is so crazy. It's so amazing. I'm like, guys, come on, man. You've been there and you've all seen great fight cards. Like, stop with the wolf tickets.
And they were so careful on the Fox era when they would book, like, okay, who are the TV people? It was either going to be very good looking people, you know what I mean? Or it's going to be like these guys that they thought they should showcase, but they weren't going to be a pay-per-view. Like they were careful, at least in the booking. What a strange thing. And you know, for Garbrandt to just be laying there grabbing his junk for huge portions of that fight, man, I was like, this is insane. It was so crazy.
Dry heaving.
I know. It's just...
It was just sloppy. It didn't feel big. It didn't feel historic. It didn't feel important. And I'm not trying to hate. Listen, man, it's 12:47 a.m. It's 5:47 a.m. over in the UK. By the way, our clocks are going to move very soon here. So we'll be 4 hours apart, PT, just for a few weeks. But the point is, like, guys, I just want to tell the audience, like, we devote our lives to this. We don't want to sit here and poo-poo things. Like, we want to be excited about things, but we got to keep it real. Now, let's put that aside and let's talk about the big news of the night, PT. I know you're foaming at the mouth. UFC Freedom 250, June 14th on the White House lawn. It has been officially announced. 6 fights on this card. 8 p.m. Eastern, it will begin. And they didn't announce Paramount Plus, CBS. It's definitely going to be on Paramount Plus. Will any of it be on CBS? I mean, after tonight, who the hell cares? But these are the fights. Ilia Topuria versus Justin Gaethje for the undisputed lightweight title. Of course, Justin just won the interim belt, although in the graphic, they didn't have him holding the belt for whatever reason. Alex Perez versus Ciryl Gane at heavyweight for the interim heavyweight title. So Tom doesn't get stripped. Alex moves up. It's not against John Jones. It's against Ciryl. Another title fight for Ciryl. Sean O'Malley versus Ayman Zahabi. The closest I'll ever get to the White House, no doubt about it. An important bantamweight fight. Mauricio Huffy versus Michael Chandler at lightweight. So Michael Chandler does get his White House fight, but not against Conor McGregor. Bo Nickel versus Kyle Daukaus is the only America versus America fight on the card. That's at 185. And then Diego Lopez, who seemingly gets on every single big fight card that the UFC puts on, from the Sphere to UFC 300 to, two title fights to Noche UFC this past year to now this going up against Steve Garcia. I can tell you guys that I know they did talk to John Jones. They couldn't settle on a number. The hope was Alex Pereira versus John Jones. I knew as of earlier this week, Topuria versus Gaethje wasn't being discussed. But I think once they realized that it wasn't going to be Pereira versus John, they needed that marquee fight at the top. So they booked Topuria versus Gaethje. They booked Pereira versus Gunn. We knew that when Pereira vacated the title, it would either be Jones or Gunn for the interim. It ends up being Gunn for the interim. PT, take it away. Your thoughts on the card.
Well, here's the thing. This is all their best fighters, right? Really, like the most exciting guys you want to see are here. Like it's Topuria, Pereira, O'Malley. You've also got Nickel, Chandler. Obviously, you mentioned Lopez there as well. Look, on the face of this is probably the best card they're going to put on this year. I would not doubt that based on what we've seen so far. And as I said, the biggest superstars are there. But Dana White said on Pat McAfee last year that this would be the best card anyone's ever seen.
Last year, was it 2 months ago? Maybe it was last year.
November. Maybe it was November. Yeah. He was saying this on Pat McAfee. And it just isn't even. Here's the problem for me. These aren't even the best. These titles are on the line. These aren't even the best fights in the division. You know, like Ilia Topuria v. Justin Gaethje. And of course, that makes sense because Gaethje's the interim champion. But like, obviously, Armin's the fight there. Alex Pereira v. Ciryl Gane. We know this is happening because you couldn't get Jones. And obviously, Tom is out as well, who is the champion of the division. It just feels as though when you set the bar that high, and this happened with 300, and we got the media scumbag treatment in the video from Dana or whatever, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. Because if you're telling us people who've been watching fights for decades now, watching UFC, watching this product, that this is going to be the best fight ever and it's going to be the biggest event ever, That card, as I said, great superstars all over it, but it doesn't feel like it's knocking my socks off. And I saw the reaction. I saw your tweet you put out, or you went to the UFC's official page, and I'm seeing the backlash from people. And I do feel it is because we set the bar so high, with, like not even Trump, just Dana saying this as well. This would be the biggest card ever. This was always going to be the reaction to this, unless you had McGregor on there, Jones on there. Every fight's a title fight, as Trump said at one stage. I mean, it will be the best card of the year for the UFC, but I think this looks like any card, basically 2015 to 2018 or whatever. I don't think it's crazy to say something like that. Like this just feels like an old school pay-per-view to me.
What do you think, Chuck?
Man, as a historic one-off, right? Like the just being the kind of novelty that it is, and you even hear this price that they're throwing out there of $60 million, and just kind of the slow unveiling of, you know, the designs and everything that went into this, and then with the hype that went around it, they did effectively set the bar too high for themselves. And that's why it was like one of those things, like this was way crazier than UFC 300, where we kept speculating maybe they have something up their sleeve. This is why I thought that, even though John Jones, I knew the reluctance and the difficulty of dealing with John Jones, even if he wants on this card, I knew that this would probably be a snag, but I was hook, line, and sinker that he would be on this card. I just felt that they had to kind of bring him into it. Even if they couldn't get like some kind of like idea what his future beyond that was, like, but they, I thought they're going to have to get him for this card because he represents like some kind of, I don't know, like, you know, magnitude or something that would add that dimension that we're talking about. So seeing it when it was unveiled, not seeing John Jones and just kind of seeing the fights, I'm with you. Like, I'm like, this is a great card, but it feels like settling in comparison to like maybe what you could have, right? PT mentioned the word like stimulating the entire fan base, not just the not casuals, but the diehards, like everybody. And the only way you can possibly do that is have some matchups that feel like you have two heaps of momentum going at each other that are you cannot really imagine either guy losing. And if you can get that kind of fight, that's really fun, right? Like, and I we've seen Alex Pereira lose, but him going for the history of a third belt against John Jones in an inter- I mean, that would have been just like, that would have blown your mind. But the problem is Ciryl Gane has been kind of cast in the same role like four or five times where it's just, it's like, okay, we can't get exactly what we want. Ciryl Gane is going to step into that spot. And I feel like he's just kind of perpetually in this. So therefore now he's fought every big name of his era, you know, and now two divisions. It's just, it's a crazy development in that sense. It's still fascinating. And I, Ariel, I think it was you who was like, you know, by the time it rolls around, we're going to be like, this is incredible. This is going to be a lot of fun. We will. I guarantee that, you know, I'll talk myself into like loving these, but on the initial reveal, you know, it felt like settling on some level. You know, it just felt a little anticlimactic. And I think that was inevitable, just the way they set it up, man.
Fifth title fight, by the way, for Ciryl Gane. And you're 100% right, the way in which you broke that down. By the way, can I just ask you guys, if Alex wins, do you consider it history? Like, do you consider him a triple champion?
I was already thinking about this. It's a toughie, isn't it?
It is a toughie.
They will celebrate it. And I know that 100%. We will, because we'll have to talk, because it's like, interim or not, he's now holding a title at heavyweight. But I mean, man, you have to put a little asterisk on it, a little one, right? Because it's like, unless he beats Aspinall, if he had beat Jones, I mean, obviously, because Jones being the original going back before Aspinall, you know, it's like, I would have no problem. But with Ciryl Gane, I don't know. It just, I think you got to have that asterisk to an extent. We won't, though. I mean, the UFC will roll with it and it'll be history, but.
PT, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. I'll just say I have no problem if we want to celebrate it, because the heavyweight title, the lineage is so fragmented. Like, the lineal MMA heavyweight champion, for all intents and purposes, is still Francis Ngannou, because he hasn't lost. But, you know, it went from Francis to then John Jones, and John doesn't end up defending it. And then there's the Tom stuff, and then he becomes interim champion. And I think because the Tom Ciryl fight ended so, you know, abruptly and unceremoniously, and because Ciryl fought him, I think it will be a little bit more digestible to say, oh, if Alex beats this guy, who was doing well against Tom, no doubt about it, for that one round, okay, yeah, we're okay with celebrating. If it was two just random dudes, if it was Patty versus Justin version in the heavyweight division, I think it would have been a little bit weird. But I think if he does it, it would be okay to celebrate it. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's a great achievement. Pereira, I think, you know, deserves all the credit he gets. He's an amazing fighter. It's a great achievement to win a third belt in a third weight class in the UFC. The problem is there's just no true line in this division anymore.
No.
You know, you just, Gane, as you said, has fought and lost the belt before on numerous occasions. And, you know, it's, what will it be, 8 months since Tom and Gane, when this happens? Mm-hmm. Like, the need for this to be a title fight feels like it's because of the occasion rather than the need to move the division on. That's
they've
just my opinion.
They've done interim belts, you know, mm-hmm. Ilya won in June. 7 months later, they did an interim title at 155. So I'm not offended by it. It's, you know, I would have been pissed off if Tom would have been stripped, but because his return is a little bit up in the air, I'm not offended by the interim. I'm not offended by the, they've done it worse than this. Can I just say, I think there's multiple reasons why I think the crowd, the fans feel so underwhelmed because of the 7-8 title fights, because Dana is saying like, this is going to be the greatest, this is going to be the sphere. By the way, when he said this was going to be the sphere on steroids, I never took it as the card was going to be on steroids. I took it as like, it's just going to look, yes. Yeah. And I think people kind of misinterpreted it. That's my opinion. But I think what makes it hard to digest is the fact that the top two fights feature two superstars, but it's not the fights that we want those superstars to be in.
Yes.
We want Ilya versus Armin. We want Alex versus John. And we're getting like the Wish version of that, right? We're getting Alex versus
John. And we want O'Malley Vian as well. Like, you know, this isn't, or, like, that isn't, or, even the fight.
Or let's be honest, I mean, I love Eamon, but I think most people wanted Sanhagen against O'Malley. So yeah. I that's what I'm seeing. They wanted Bo Nickel against Colby or some nonsense. Yeah. Like, by the way, imagine your whole
That's
gimmick
so
is centered around the White House, and it all led to this one. Moment, and you're on the outside looking in. I mean,
sorry, man, you were the seventh fight, and we're only going with six. This week.
Sorry, kid. Better luck next time, huh? Better luck. Those 7, 9, whatever it was, 8 years that you devoted to this fucking gimmick. Sorry, bud.
You can be the backup for it.
Here's your hat. Here's your nice little hat and photo op. I don't know. That's what I feel. I just think that people need to take a step back and look at the landscape and be like, who else?
Yeah.
Who else did you want?
Yeah. Like,
they don't have that other person. They don't have that guy. They don't have that matchup. They don't have that rivalry that you're looking for.
Can I ask you, man, like, so John Jones isn't on this card. This is the thing that spoke to him, right? Like, he was like, yeah, I'm retired. Oh, no, wait, there's a White House card. I want to be on that. Like, what happens here now? Is he like, is he done?
I think effectively just ended the career of John Jones as an MMA fighter, which is wild.
And it also moves so far off of him, his presence, right? Because now you're introducing an interim title that is trying to get back to Aspinall. I mean, he's now so far removed from the equation that it's like, I don't even know where you plug him back in at this point.
I mean, you could plug him in rather quickly. I think anyone would love to see him fight Tom or anything like that. But look, he retired. He pissed them off. They didn't call him for a very, very long time. And then as the dust started to clear and they were looking at, okay, we need to start booking this card, it became very apparent that he was the best option. And they just couldn't come to terms. And I don't think they got down to like, I don't even think it got to the goal line, to be honest. I really don't. By the way, I said this earlier with the guys, but I do want to just say, as someone who used to very much be in the business of trying to break fight news and has very much removed himself from that world for my own sanity,
I was waiting tonight to see if you might slip something in there.
Once he started to say, like, oh, Saturday, I decided to poke around a little bit just for old time's sake, you know, see if I still got it. I got to say, they put the fear of God in these managers. The fear, like, these people who would talk to me all the time, like, they didn't want to say.
Oh, my God.
I think they thought that the phones were tapped. They're like, man.
Throwing their phones at the window when they see Ariel's.
Love you. Oh. I was like,
you see that man on the bench over there with the newspaper? Go sit next to him. He's got information.
Nothing. Not even a hint, not even a guessing game they wanted to play. So kudos to Hunter Campbell and the guys, because they told everyone basically, like, if this gets out. What they told them was, if this gets out, we're canceling your fight. So, like, which manager would do that in good conscience? And I told them, I don't even want to break this. I'm just curious to, like, kibitz with you over this right now. Like, I'm not even trying to break this news. Can you just tell me?
Ceremonious end, though, to John Jones. Like, seriously, like,
yeah.
I kept thinking, you know, even through this whole process where, you know, he's kind of damaging his twilight years and his legacy just by ducking effectively Tom Aspinall, you still thought there'd be some closure, right? Like, there'd be something that would happen, and it seemed to be the perfect opportunity with a guy like Alex Pereira coming up, right? It seemed like he wanted him, White House, all this, to not. It's crazy to me that this is the way it's going to end. What was it like, the announcement of his retirement effectively stands from Azerbaijan or whatever, like, whenever they just did that in the middle of the night? It's just, it's crazy that's how one of the great careers in the UFC basically comes to an end.
Yeah, it's
these guys
weird,
are in and over.
Like, go ahead.
They're in well over a billion for this deal. We were saying before the Aspinall fight, like, he deserves his money. You know, earlier you're speaking about McGregor. You're talking about they need to get a deal with Nate. Are we convinced that this will happen? We saw McGregor speaking to Ian Parker and Chael Sonnen and talking, well, if Conor Benn's worth $15 million, how much am I? Like, this feels like it's going to be a reoccurring problem for the UFC if we are waiting for them to make these big fights. And every time they have one of these big fighters that everybody wants to see, we've all agreed that if John Jones was on this White House card, it would add to it astronomically. Are we convinced that they're in the business of making these big name fights happen anymore? Because that would say to me that McGregor's going to have a frustrating time at the negotiating table himself.
To a degree, yes. And McGregor said over the weekend, like, I'm expecting something early in the week, meaning early next week. As I said when we were talking about John Jones, I don't have faith in this regime that they are going. it was once a regime that was leading the way in the UFC, led by Lorenzo Fertitta back in the day, where they were like, we need to make the big fights. Like, we are going to lock ourselves in a room and make these big fights. This regime, for whatever reason, the business is different, the landscape is different, the pay-per-view deal is different, all that stuff, the broadcast deal is different. If they reach a point where they just don't want to go anymore, they don't do it. They are more incentivized right now to make the bigger fights in boxing than in MMA. Because in boxing, they're trying to disrupt. They're trying to take away from others. They're trying to build something. Here, they're so far and ahead away from everyone, they don't have to do it. So if John Jones comes around and asks for X amount of million, they'll just be like, nah, we're not going to do that. Sorry. And once they started talking about the 60 million and all this stuff, I was like, oh, they're setting us up for some kind of letdown here. And I knew Conor wouldn't be on because it's the same thing that happened during the pandemic. They have to make money off of his fights. So I think, again, as you said, Chuck, as well, like I think come June 14th, everyone will be excited about this and watching it, and they'll make a big deal about it. But I just think people need to remember, like, this is the landscape. This is the UFC. These are the players. This is the roster. Like, I don't know what you were. Look, they could have had Ronda Rousey. They didn't want Ronda Rousey. I don't know if that helps you, but like, she's a superstar. People would have gone, I think, somewhat excited over that. They wanted Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes on it. She wasn't healthy. So a little bit of bad luck involved there. But
I know one thing, and maybe, I mean, I guess maybe we'll have news on this soon, but if I'm Netflix and I get Ngannou, like you mentioned him being like the actual heavyweight champion still, I mean, this is a fine thing to be rolling out in the vicinity of that date, you know?
I'll tell you, Ngannou versus Pereira at heavyweight would have been tasty.
Oh my God, man.
That would have been tasty.
So we say all this, Ariel, and you're saying, like, you know, I don't know what you expected. Are we basically saying, like, brace yourself to be underwhelmed a lot? Like, brace yourself for the feeling you had tonight for the BMF title when we heard these people booing there, even though we've all agreed that Charles Oliveira has had a great performance. Brace yourself for the feeling of you're waiting for the best card ever to appear, and this is the card. You're waiting for the Conor McGregor fight to be booked further down the line. Brace yourself for disappointment. Like, is that essentially what we're saying here? Like, we're going to keep being back here under this regime, like being like, oh, I actually wanted a bit more.
I just think you have to be realistic. Just look at the landscape, you know, just look at the roster. Who are the super duper superstars? You know, by the way, they've got one on their hands named Armin Tsarukyan and they're refusing to book him.
I know.
By the way, it's crazy, man. Nice shot of Armin with the handcuffs there. Did you guys see that when they showed him in the crowd?
No, I missed it.
Oh, when they were doing they were doing the celebrity stuff. Like, oh, yeah, this guy's here. This, and Armin's sitting in the crowd wearing handcuffs, which I thought was hilarious. Pretty cool. Yeah, which I thought was, I guess, ballsy on his part. It's just the UFC. I don't know, but people are pissed, man. Holy shit, people are pissed.
What I mean, a couple of these other fights, by the way, are kind of out of left field. I don't know if you guys anticipated. Like, I would have never guessed that Chandler would be given Hoofy in this fight, man. I mean, that just feels extra together. Cruel. It's all right. We're going to put you on the card.
Together. Who's well, free? You're on.
There was some talk of him versus BSD. I don't know which one's worse for him.
I know.
I'm happy that he's on there because I thought it was a pretty raw deal that he was just taken out of the Conor sweepstakes. So this feels like a nice little, you know, a peace offering, so to speak. What about just like the lack of Americans on the card?
That's,
you know, like
stuck out to me too.
The main event could very well feature an American getting knocked out. The co-main event doesn't have an American. O'Malley, obviously American, Zahabi isn't. Chandler, American, two Americans at the on the Bo Nickel card. So in the end, I think it's Garcia, Bo, Kyle, Chandler, and Gaethje. Five Americans out of the 11 fighters on the card. No, 12 fighters on the card, excuse me. So not even...
The Diego Lopez thing is funny, too. You're talking about Armon, you know, who's like wearing handcuffs. But meanwhile, here's Diego out there, man. He's appearing on any big card whenever he wants it.
Living his best life. Yeah, they love him. Gosh, they love this guy. It's unbelievable.
He's at every event,
how do you feel about the
name? At every event.
What's that, PT?
As Americans, how do you feel about the name UFC Freedom 250?
I'm fine with it. I mean,
freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, PT.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm sold on it now too. Thank you, sir.
If I'm Felicia Spencer and Amanda Nunes, I'm pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
Do you get it?
Because Kayla got where you're going to push them in?
No, they headlined UFC 250, and so it feels like their shine is getting taken away.
I did not connect that.
It's tough.
Man.
Yeah, that is tough. Nate Diaz tweeting boring mother effers.
Yeah.
I guess
it was right there, wasn't it?
It was right there for you.
He corrected it too. He had it like in lowercase. He was like, wait a minute, for people to understand, it needs to be like, I need the capitals. So good for him.
By the way, Pereira's the dog going into that. Oh, here's, these guys are all dorks fighting for my belt. Pereira the dog, surprise.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Man, I am a little surprised by that.
As am I.
What do you think? What do you think, surprised. PT? That's like a, that's the most favorable matchup, right? I think that he could have got.
For Pereira.
Yeah, for Pereira. Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that. I mean, Gon looked good in the little bit we saw against Aspinall, but he's kind of folded in other big spots. So I don't know.
How freaked about is he going to be about hand position in this fight? Like after the last one, you know what I mean? I know we talked about it with John Jones, but
oh my God,
the fact that the so much discourse about gouges and pokes since then, there is a referee summit that Uncrowned filmed. The Casey was out there filming it. Ben was there as well, and a massive thrust of that was punishing people's just hands being out. Not like, not even contact, hands being out at all should be costing points. You can imagine that he will be under a lot of scrutiny when he's fighting again based on what happened with Aspinall. And that's not me saying like he went out there to try and maul his eyeballs out. That was his intention from the jump. I just mean there's just been so much discourse and so much conversation about gouges ever since.
A couple of factoids for you guys. Now they're giving out the 100K bonuses for performance of the night. Drew Dober, Gregory Rodriguez, Adolfo Bellato, and Alberto Montez won those. So shout out to them. You get 25K if you get a stoppage. This is interesting from Aaron Bronstetter. Holloway Oliveira is only the second BMF bout with a takedown landed. Masvidal landed a takedown against Diaz in the first one. It's the first BMF championship bout without a single knockdown registered, which is kind of interesting. Gate, 8.3 million, 19,000 people at T-Mobile Arena. By the way, speaking of the White House card, I did mention that there was talk of Gable Steveson debuting on that card, but that did not happen.
Clearly, why didn't it happen?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I was told that that he would fight in Mexico and that maybe he would fight in March in WOW, but I don't know if that's going to happen. And then maybe it's just a lot. Or maybe they decided after what happened. And by the way, quick little tease for you. We've got a fantastic Uncrowned film coming out this week called The Making of a Superstar, Gable Steveson. Casey went to Mexico with the team to follow him behind the scenes. It's a fantastic, fantastic. It might be my favorite one. And as you know already, what happened in that fight, he got, you know, hit with the spinning back kick and all that. Maybe they think he needs a little bit more time. I don't know. Just three pro fights at this point. So, you know, it's not like he's been doing this for 10 fights. Dana White is speaking to the media right now. Looking at some notes from Aaron Bronstetter. White was surprised by how the main event played out and didn't expect Oliveira to be able to dominate Holloway the way in which he did. White said returning to network television was huge. Although, you know, they used to do like ABC cards and not really make a big deal about that. So it's not like...
True.
White says the matchmakers presented him with choices for the White House fights and he chose them. White said there was no chance for Aspinall to be on it, which is why Pereira and Gon are fighting for interim. White says there was never a possibility of John Jones fighting on the White House card. White says that John has hip problems and that John was never in negotiations. I mean, I was told differently. White says that it's fair that John Jones is retired, that his fighting career is over. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about the negotiations, but I mean, John Jones himself said it.
And what was the thing at the weigh-in then? When the fight, everyone was like, this is when the fight fell out. And it's like,
oh, I mean, Maynard. He said on a stream, a power slap stream, he said that a fight had just fallen out. And then,
yeah,
I don't know. there was a clip of them talking, and they're like, maybe this is what, who the fuck knows? I don't know. Everyone's so obsessed. What was the fight? What was the fight?
I know. I saw a lot of people talking about that.
I bet you it was good, though. I bet you it was.
Yeah. That would have made it.
Actually, someone asked him about that, and he said he will not disclose which fight fell off.
It was John Jones.
The strange circumstances surrounding why.
It's Colby. This is close, man.
Wow. Oh my God. Weird stuff. Well, some canopus, this White House card.
It really is.
Can I return real quick to the yes. main and ask you something? Like you mentioned, sure. like the, you know, you mentioned this, like there's only been one takedown. It was Masvidal, and it was there's always been a knockdown, whatever that stat was, which really does kind of feel like an old boys agreement, right? Of like, okay, we're gonna go in there and we're gonna do this. Is there any possibility that Max Holloway never thought that this kind of game plan was coming at him? Like that he was like, I think we're gonna stand and trade more. You know what I mean? Like that he just thought he would be accommodated in the way he wanted to fight.
For Charles or
for Max? Like, so Max basically he looked caught off guard to an extent. Like he didn't anticipate that this was going to be the dominant, you know, pattern of the fight. I wonder if he in the back of his mind was like, Charles will fight me. You know, Charles will come in and
maybe.
And we'll have this little handshake type thing, and you know, like the other BMF things.
It was it was surprising. It was really surprising to see it that. I mean, Max a great fighter, a well rounded fighter. He had not been dominated like that in quite some time, and it really wasn't the firefight that I think most people were expecting. But honestly,
and also
like,
the first minute he comes in there and he kind of. Mm-hmm. He starts to get that rhythmic boxing and putting together his hands like very in flow, connecting on a couple shots in the first minute, and it was almost as if he never anticipated that he was about to get wrapped up and dumped. Like it was like it didn't cross his mind. That's why I was asking. I was like, it seemed to catch him completely off guard on the first one at least, and then the subsequent ones just seemed like he was helpless to do anything about it.
Never seen anyone do that to him before. You know, so easily.
That's why I was asking. I'm like, it's just. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what he says about it, but
the weird thing is like, that's the fight that Charles should have fought. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
As unfan friendly as it was, he fought a brilliant fight. Like he stood there with Ilya Topuria. That wasn't the right thing to do. This exactly was the right thing to do. So good on him. Like, maybe that Ilya fight changed him. He was great against Mateus Gamrod. He was great against Max Holloway. Maybe he's got one more run in him. I don't know. But that's exactly what he should have done. It just, you know, sometimes it's the same thing with Khamzat and DDP. Sometimes people get excited about these fights and they tune in and they're like, well, that wasn't exactly what I wanted, or that wasn't exactly what I had hoped for or paid for. But these days you don't have to pay as much as you once did. Is there anything on this card that you guys want to point out that you're excited about, that you're passionate about, or... You know, Dober gets the win. Gregory Rodriguez, Cody, we spoke about a little bit. That was weird.
Michael went down right at the moment he was supposed to. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Right. I don't know anything about that.
No.
It seemed like he was actually fighting a good fight, didn't it? Like
he had the
speed advantage. He was landing those shots, man. It was kind of.
But he was winning.
You know, he was winning the fight. Yeah.
So. By the way. Shout out to Yuani Andrzejczyk and Zhang Weili. They announced that they're going into the Hall of Fame, UFC 248, their legendary fight. The second to last UFC fight that I've seen in person. Main event that night was Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero. Wow. Yeah, that was the last show before the pandemic.
Crazy,
March.
Man.
Actually, it was this weekend, 2020, 6 years ago this weekend. It was like March 7th or 6th, something like that.
Yeah.
So shout out to them. I suspect that ceremony will take place in July. The International Fight Week event hasn't been officially announced yet, but last I heard it was July 11th. So minus two would be July 9th. So I'll see you guys all out there for that extravaganza. That was fun when we went a few years ago, right?
That was fun.
It was fun. We went to the ceremony, remember?
Pizza's not so sure. Yeah, I remember. Of course.
That was a great time.
Remember.
You got shouted out. Remember?
I got shouted out. Yes, it wasn't in the prompter because DC's too big of a puss. No, I'm kidding.
It was great.
Guys, any final thoughts? Chuck?
You know what, man? You mentioned the pandemic. In the pandemic, I went and I went and sat with Ben Askren for a couple of days to get material to help him write his book, which obviously came out a few years ago. And the biggest thing we discussed was Jorge Masvidal and just his contentious kind of relationship with him and him having to kind of take a long view on everything that was happening. I know you pointed this out today, but how good was that, man?
So good.
That they today, was it today? I don't know when this actually took place.
It was today.
So it was today, and they got together. They post a picture. You've got Ben Askren, this guy who's found, like, rejuvenated life. Like, and he's saying, like, you got to get rid of these grudges, man. And he's just happy to be making friends with the guy who altered his, you know, just altered so much in his life at that moment. I thought that was really cool. There's sometimes I don't want to see arch rivals get familiar with each other, become friends. This happens occasionally, but this is one of those ones where I'm like, given Askren's everything he's been through, I thought it was a really genuine moment, man.
Amazing. Warm my heart. I want to give a shout out to Rory Karpf.
Yes.
Our friend.
Yeah, he told me actually that this was happening.
I think he helped orchestrate it.
Yeah.
I think he's working on some kind of documentary, and I think he helped orchestrate it. So shout out to him for making that happen. A beautiful, beautiful scene. That was amazing. I was going to make a joke about you not mentioning the Knicks win, but like, how can I make a joke after that? You know, like, that's just... Pizza, in case you're wondering, my Knicks beat his Nuggets by 39 points last night.
Dude, okay, it was...
So I thought he was going to wax poetic on that, but nothing.
You know what the worst part of this is? I have the NBA package, right? Which just gets worse and worse every year. But this year, I could not watch that game because it's like so local that you have to get whatever it is, the other network, what is it, like the MSG or something like that? So I had to pay... like $30 to get this game. And I gotta get it because Aaron Gordon's coming back. Finally the Nuggets starting lineup, what's intended, is coming back. I put it on, and from that moment, they're up 10-2 or something like that when I finally got it on. From that moment on, it was just disaster. I mean, Jamal Murray's getting carried out of there, and the lead is going from like 5 points to 12 points, and then on the third shot, it was like one of the most frustrating games I've ever watched, man.
I don't know why you guys turn into the Pelicans when you play us as of late, because it's weird.
I was saying that last night. I was like, if the Knicks make the finals, which they have a great chance of doing that, they should be praying to God it's the Nuggets, because they own the Nuggets. I don't know what it is, especially during the Jokic era. Like, you know, everybody else is kind of not good against the Nuggets, but the Knicks seem to beat them regularly in Denver too.
Yeah, definitely the highlight of my
weekend. It's not good, man. It's not good.
PT. You look fantastic.
I think you're messing with me, aren't you?
No. The eyes are getting smaller and smaller. The eyes are getting smaller and smaller, so we're going to wrap this bad boy up. Thank you to everyone.
We're
going
to get to the
calls. Don't blame me. Don't blame me. I can do this all day, lads.
No, I know you can. I would never doubt you. I'm tired because I keep thinking, oh, it's actually 2:20 a.m., and that's just
I wish it was 2:20 a.m.
I know. Thank you very much to everyone who tuned in today. Great job by the whole team over at the HQ, boys in the back. Thank you to our good friends over at Arena Club. Got a lot of cards, a lot of offers. People are offering me all kinds of things for my cards, but I'm not budging, at least for now. Actually, I did do one deal, so shout out to them, arenaclub.com. Wow. Shout out to the whole crew in the control room. Shout out to the boys in the back, like I said. Shout out to Charles Oliveira, Caio Bajalio. Didn't talk a lot about Caio, but a nice bounce back win for him over RDR. And today for another edition of the program. Then I'm off to Los Angeles for the big press conference on Tuesday. That should be fun. That should be the pro. I mean, that's going to be must-see TV.
It's like Italy,
MSG on Friday.
He's always off somewhere, man.
Mr. International.
Stop it. But we've got a big week coming up. A big week. We'll talk more about the White House card, more about 326. Of course, we'll help you preview the big Josh Emmett, Kevin Vallejos fight coming up next weekend at the Apex. So stay tuned for that. Woo! But for now, it is time to go. We say salute and good night from New York City. Bye-bye.